This is more of an outline rather than an extended argument. I guess I'm just making a case that all of us, perhaps you're already there, should take the matter of anthropology really seriously in all of your apologetic engagement. Three reasons why I think it should be at the forefront, really at the front end. We have to load it there, I believe, today. Three reasons I want to give you. First is that it's a wide open door for engaging skeptics. When I engage skeptics in Cambridge, people who are completely outside the faith, I find in this matter, I can get a conversation going very quickly and a meaningful conversation. So it's a wide open door. Let me give you a few reasons for that. We live in what's being called by people like Charles Taylor, the secular age. And the secular age is actually a cosmology. Cosmologies help you understand the harmony of things, what holds it all together, the center. And in the secular age, humans are the center. In humans, all things hold together. So our age, I think some Christians haven't clued into this yet, we're not theocentric. We're actually the first non-theocentric civilization in all of history. We are anthropocentric. Everything is centered in us. So that's significant to our cultural context. So living in an anthropocentric moment, what matters most to people outside biblical faith are issues that spiral around being human. Goes together. Anthropocentric, humans at the center of everything. Those are the matters that concern people. And that's true both at the level of the individual humans, but I actually think it also has a collective dimension. So the secular age, humanism's progress myth, which I think now is beginning to dissolve, we're becoming much more pragmatic in terms of how we see our dominion over the world. All of these matters too, collectively, get right to the center of anthropological issues. So let me very quickly start at the level of the individual. In terms of our worldview interviews, I think most people are quite inconsistent in the worldviews, so it's unlikely through the interview process you're going to get someone who's really a materialist all the way through. I think pretty much everyone in the West today is a narcissist. We're all on a journey of self-discovery. What matters most to us are matters that are about our personal existence. And I think we're caught today in the greatest identity crisis, again, in all of history. The great irony of the modern age, we've never invested more in the question of who I am and never been more lost as to who we are. But that's an anthropological issue. And it's true of everyone. I have to be careful with this term. I think we see through history lots of different forms of paganism. I call our era of paganism the ego pagan era. And if you look at ancient paganism and then what I'm calling the modern paganism of ego paganism, it's interesting what they have in common and what's different about them. And because we're so egocentric, it's hard to engage people on matters that aren't directly related to them. So key in, focus in on what interests them the most, which is themselves. It's also true on the collective level. There's a huge cultural dialogue going on at the moment. This is my book is in a sense engaging a lot of the conversation around cultural anthropology. And I think the great question of our time is Shakespeare. Some good things came out of England. Shakespeare is one of them. Bless the guy. And Lear's great question. This is the play King Lear, slightly out of context, but he asked, who is it who can tell me who I am? And there's a huge amount of attention today that I think gets right to that question. Who is it who can tell me who I am? Having moved away from the Judeo-Christian heritage, that marked Europe for hundreds and hundreds of years, we're really struggling today to collectively give an account of ourselves as humans. We've lost the imago Dei, so we're kind of unhitched now. My book looks at the two current anthropological accounts. For sake of simplicity, I call the one the hardware account, the very materialistic one. So everything about the human, all of our experience, all of our capacities is grounded in neurology, in the genome. That includes consciousness. The other account that we hear today more from the social sciences. So who is it who can tell me who I am? Well, the social sciences have a lot to say too. I call this the software account. So humans fundamentally are stamped out in the world of their social relations. So what a human is socially constructed. We hear the language of social construction a lot. It's interesting, B.F. Skinner, 60s and 70s, thought stamping people out in the social realm was a really good thing, beyond freedom and dignity. We can be programmed, we can be conditioned, that's a good thing. The world's a mess post-World War II. Skinner says, well, let's socially condition people. Today, it's the opposite. We have been conditioned by terrible forces in terms of oppression. So this is cultural Marxism. The critical theories that are around today, we've been terribly conditioned by social factors and we have to overcome them. But they're both software accounts. And I'm quite interested in where the hardware account and the software accounts collide with each other, because there's plenty of points where they don't come together very well. So the point is, anthropology really is the greatest question, I think, of our moment. So it makes sense to start here in terms of engagement. I think if we start with theocentric considerations, lots of apologetics for me still goes in that direction. There's a place for it, but I find I don't get much traction there. So even the God hypothesis, I like the way you went about it, Mihail. I think you can get to it, but often you don't find a whole lot of traction there. And as I said, I find engaging a non-Christian in a conversation, when I open the door to anthropology, we just get going. I mean, here's an example. Recently, the guy who lives across from me, we're becoming good friends. He's a climatologist, eminent environmentalist, and he thinks that humans are the greatest disaster this planet has ever seen, as many think now in terms of the climate debate. This world and planet would be far better off if humans weren't on it. Wow, that's an open door for a very interesting conversation, which we're having now. Anthropology opens the door to all the big questions. So one could raise an objection. I can hear certain kinds of well-grounded evangelicals saying, Andrew, you're just playing into the hands of where the problem is. It's all about us. If you start with anthropology, aren't you just catering to the problem? Self-inflation is where it's all gone wrong. So why go there? We need to take them in another direction. Now, I have a little bit of sympathy with that argument. I certainly don't want to leave people in their ego paganism. But I think there's lots of good reasons why we don't need to be afraid of starting with anthropology. And it's because it opens the door to the big questions, including metaphysics. One of my passions, how do we get metaphysics back in the room in terms of a serious discussion? Lots of ways anthropology does that. You had it in your questionnaire, questions around consciousness. I'm very interested in the German neurophilosopher Thomas Metzinger. Guy's amazing. Amazing at just being consistent to the fact that we're self-conscious nothings. And we have to live in that paradox, he says. And he says you can't even know it because you can't know you're a nothing. That's absurd. So we can't even get there. But he's actually very consistent to his view of consciousness that it just emerges from the brain, so that the self is nothing. The point is, in the matter of consciousness, so many big issues come out. Can we really reduce consciousness to the brain? And we're going to have a lecture through this week, which takes up that issue. I think we don't need to be afraid of neurobiology. It offers huge opportunity for some really, really good discussion. Once your questionnaire did this. Once you open up the matter of consciousness, you're not far from a discussion on, well, I wonder if there is a soul. So it opens the door there, the door to the metaphysical. Things like human choice. So my book is abductive, which is the best inference in terms of an explanation. And true abduction is meant to be eloquent. I try and put some poetry in it. I'm not a natural poet, but I'm trying here to make it a little bit poetic rather than just a deductive or inductive argument. I'm all for abduction. I think abduction is a great apologetic tool we have to use today. But how do we account for human choice? For the fact that we're language animals, we're capable of abstract thinking. I find the nature of human desire, we get poetic then, just remarkable. C.S. Lewis, of course, the master of tracing how human desire works. These are anthropological issues. And lots on your questionnaire actually are anthropology. Not just the one, what is a human, a lot of those factors were directed there. So as Christian apologists, we simply need to know that we work within a worldview where anthropology is always coupled to theology. They're not separated. So if you engage what it means to be a human, you're only a few inches away from the doctrine of God, because the centerpiece of our anthropology is the Imago Dei. So these aren't separated from each other. And I think some of you might not like them. I'm a huge John Calvin fan, especially the first book, Marilynne Robinson, totally transformed. She's the great novelist by reading the first. I wish she had got to the salvation part too. She's not so fond of that bit. But Calvin on creation is remarkable. Where does he start his Institutes of Christian Religion? The great document that defined kind of Calvinist reform stream in so many ways. Well, he says, nearly all the wisdom we possess, that is to say, true and sound wisdom, consists of two parts, the knowledge of God and of ourselves. And he shows, as he goes through this little argument, how connected these two things are. These are bound together. If you touch the one, Calvin says, you get to the other. There's this kind of double feedback loop. And I would say every anthropological view has a theology attached to it. Years ago, I discovered this quote by a somewhat obscure early father, but lots of good PhD work done on this guy. Show me your man, and I'll show you your God. So if you're a materialist, your God is basically atoms, subatomic particles. This is the absolute with nothing left out. It's given an ultimacy, so you're getting to an ultimate and absolute vision of the world. So I think we should never forget that anthropology is coupled with theology. It opens the door to all the big questions. And then finally, as the West moves to abolish humanity, thinking here of Lewis's wonderful book, The Abolition of Man, I think as apologists, we need to read it. Okay, I'm just gonna go for it once a year. Once every 5 months?
Six times
a year. Interesting. I'm with you, Bruce. I used to read it aloud at the Round Church in Cambridge to groups of Christians and non-Christians. We had the most amazing discussions, maybe the most profound book. And Michael Ward has just published an amazing commentary on the abolition of man. I think that one's called Abolishing Humanity. Well worth a read. In a moment when the West moves to abolishing humanity, our Christian anthropo-apologetic is indispensable. So as I said, we're drowning in the morass of some awful anthropologies today. And they're leading to some of the darkest places. Someone mentioned transhumanism. They played the transhumanist. Well done. That is huge. Transhumanism being the merging of biology and the technical, the nanotechnical. This is the great vision. People like the Gates Foundation, Google, the Calico side of it, they're putting huge amounts of money into the transhumanist vision, which they're clear to say is post-human. Transhumanism leads to post humanism. And that's okay for these guys. We just need to upgrade. That's just one of the awful things that's out there. The point being here, this is the point I want to make. I think one of the greatest discoveries in the history of the West, if we can call that the West 1500 years of history, the greatest discovery was the biblical anthropology. And humanism, most of you know this, humanism for hundreds of years used the borrowed capital from the biblical anthropology. It's a bastardized form of our anthropology. It borrowed from it. It couldn't have developed apart from our anthropology. And today the West desperately needs to recover the biblical anthropology. It's our great gift to the secular age. And we can say with great humility that Christianity is God's description of who we are. Therefore, it's a true account of who we are. It's the answer to Lear's question. I love Jewish thinkers in this. Abraham Heschel, he's a guy to read. What's his one about man is, come on, I just escaped my... He's written a lot of stuff, and a lot of it is anthropological. I love this quote. I slightly quibble with it on theological grounds, but I love what he's getting at. The Bible is primarily not man's vision of God, but God's vision of man. The Bible isn't man's theology, but God's anthropology. And I think it's lovely to see that as a key aspect of biblical revelation. It's God's anthropology. And when you tamper with God's anthropology, it always leads to something bad, what Lewis calls the abolition of man. So a few examples very, very quickly. Slavery, cultures which embrace slavery, you can see that slavery is justified on just bad anthropology. There's a history since Genesis 3 of misogyny in the world. It's a bad anthropology. I just reread Plato's Timaeus. Wow. Women are a bug, like a defect in the system. And we had the perfect rendering of humanity in males, but if they don't behave with courage, they're going to be reincarnated as females. That's your punishment. This is pretty awful. Abortion, end-of-life issues, transhumanism, all the stuff around gender and race theory today, this is all built on a very defective anthropology. It's so important that we get this right because of the implications flowing out of it. So I'm going to say, I mean, if I was back in Roman times and not a Roman citizen and a slave, I probably would have objected to what I'm going to say now. But I can't think of a moment when anthropology matters more than right now, partly because of our capabilities to change ourselves as we approach the transhumanist vision. I think also that we have conditioning tools in the digital worlds that can shape us unlike any other time. It has the possibility to shape us and condition us. So I think B.F. Skinner's vision is likely to come true. So this is the crisis of our time. It's an anthropological crisis. We say with humility, we have God's anthropology and we have to argue for it. We've got to do the work, the hard work, and then make a case for this anthropology.